could have my pick, I would like to learn that Newton's laws must be modified in order to correctly describe gravitational interactions at large distances. That's more appealing than a universe filled with a new kind of subnuclear particle. This is Vera Rubin, who's the astronomer who discovered that stars and galaxies do not move fast enough according to Newtonian and Einstein gravity. Okay, this is the conundrum. I think it's one of the great mysteries of modern physics and cosmology. Why is 96% of matter and energy in the universe invisible? When you first hear this, it's quite a striking statement. So we have, according to the standard picture, this is the amount of dark matter in the present universe. This is the dark energy responsible for the accelerated expansion of the universe. And then, but at 380,000 years after the Big Bang, so-called decoupling, the dark matter was dominant, significantly dominant compared to atoms, photons, and neutrinos. So I'm made of only 4% of what you can see, which is rather humiliating. This is just start. It's supposed to start with sound, with trumpets blaring. Okay. But wasn't able to do that. Modify gravity. So we know that the problem is according to Zwicky, Swiss astronomer in 1933, observed that if you use a virial theorem, the clusters of galaxies are not stable, and you need some extra matter to make gravity stronger. And then we moved to later work by Vera Rubin and collaborators around the early 70s, which showed that from Doppler shift measurements, 21 centimeter hydrogen, that, as I said, stars are not moving in circular orbits fast enough to agree with Newtonian gravity. We'll get to that, as we'll see. So the problem is that we haven't detected dark matter particles. After 30 or more years searching, we still do not have a confirmed detection of a dark matter particle. Presumably dark matter is made of matter, which means it's made of some kind of particle. So we have two possibilities. Either dark matter particles don't exist in the present universe, I stress the present universe, or we have to modify Newtonian Einstein gravity. Those are the two possibilities in my opinion. As we'll see, in order to fit the enormous amount of data now available, we have to consider modified gravity if there isn't dark matter. So, after a series of modified gravity theories published by me, I ended up with this simplest version, so-called scalar tensor vector gravity, published 10 years ago. 10 years ago. As we'll see, it took 10 years for me and collaborators to work through all the data set by set. And this is what I'm going to be talking about, a kind of status report. So the latest underground experiment, the Lux experiment in Lead, South Dakota, they used 370 kilos of liquid, noble inert xenon gas as a detector. And they showed that they did not get any events for dark matter particles. So to date, there is no convincing detection of dark matter particles has been achieved in either laboratory or satellite experiments. The problem with satellite experiments is that astrophysics. In astrophysics, you can always get an alternative explanation in terms of pulsars, synchrotron radiation, or whatever that can fit the data. And that there's 3.5 keV line that's been supposedly observed according to Fermilat. A recent paper claims that it doesn't exist. This is a controversial issue.
So the issue here is that we need to have an interaction process between dark matter and visible matter. And
right.
So is there any, seeing that we don't have a model of dark matter, is there any reason to think that there has to be such interaction? Or we just not have a completely parallel set of dark matter as opposed to visible matter, and the two just don't interact except gravitationally?
Well, we infer dark matter from gravitation only at present, either in the past universe or the present. So according to the consensus, we should be seeing some weak interaction between the dark matter and...
Why?
Well, why? Because why not? I mean...
Well, but it depends on what model of dark matter you're thinking of. If you're thinking of you're going to make it with primordial black holes, and you wouldn't expect any real interaction. That's his point. So it is, you're pushing that, obviously, you're biased with that statement. I mean, that the LHC is not seeing anything, it's, of course, ruling out WIMPs at that level, but it's not saying anything about everything else.
It's all bias. A lot of it's sociological over the years. It's a null experiment, and you can never really confirm null experiments. In 1921, 22, they started doing experiments again to detect the ether. And because a physicist, American physicist, claimed he had detected the ether, so they had to redo the whole thing again. This is 21-22. And the Michelson-Morley experiment was done in the late 19th century. So it's the null experiment, just goes on. However, we have to bring in Mark Occam's razor at some point, and potentially a magic bullet, which I'm going to get to, an experiment which actually distinguishes dark matter from modified gravity. Okay, so this is the latest updated LHC result as of a few weeks ago. And as you can see, they see nothing down to pretty low cross sections. End of this year, they're going to start up the LHC Zeppelin underground experiment, a ton of xenon gas, and they're going to be starting to touch the neutrino, solar neutrino background. And once they hit that, the game is over as far as this kind of experiment is concerned, because you don't get a big enough signal-to-noise ratio. Okay, so this is what we have to deal with in 2016. In 100 years ago, plus 2 months, Einstein published his field equations. And it was the fourth of four talks at the Project Academy. And he kept coming in, giving another talk. And in those days, they published them automatically in the Project Academy Wissenschaften, and without anonymous referees. And on the third talk, he had problems with conservation of energy momentum. The third talk, he had the trace of the energy momentum tends to zero, so the universe was massless. And he didn't like that, so a week later he came back in, put the trace of energy momentum tends to not zero, and we have Einstein's field equations. He was in rather strong competition with David Hilbert, who sent him galley proofs of a paper which more or less contained Einstein's field equations. But he had also problems with the interpretation of the matter. Okay, so this is what we have to fit. If you don't, to quote Feynman, you guess a theory, okay? And then your theory, you You have a mathematical construction for the theory. And then you work out the consequences of the theory, predictions. And then comes the last part. You have to confirm the theory empirically with the experiment. And if you don't confirm it, then it's wrong, and you throw it out. And you either quit altogether and do something else, or you start another theory. You make another guess, another theoretical prediction. There is a tendency today in physics, modern physics, to look for non-empirical ways of doing theoretical physics. I strongly oppose this, okay? Now, so we have to fit the cosmological data, which is enormous, and galaxy rotation curves, galaxy evolution stability, galactic cluster dynamics, the bullet cluster, Aber-520 train wreck cluster, collisions, gravitational lensing, binary pulsar timing, compact astrophysical objects, neutron stars, solar system experiments, and for all of that. And by the way, the magic bullet, general relativity, occurred 80 years after the publication of the field equations, around 1995, with very large interferometer, baseline interferometer experiments for radio waves. And the bending of light was measured to 0.01% accuracy. Okay. Now, there is no ultimate theory of physics. However, when you reach that level, you begin to realize that you have trouble if you want to modify Einstein gravity, at least for the solar system. But as we'll see, when you leave the solar system, the whole game is open, because Einstein Newtonian gravity has not been tested well enough outside the solar system. Oh, by the way, the last one here is strong gravity. This is new. There's a physical review letter coming out soon with Avery Broderick et al., in which they can determine the shadow of the black hole to significant accuracy. I'll get to that later. Okay, so this is MOG, the field equations. And I won't spend too much time on this. I have to add extra degrees of freedom to the metric tensor mu nu in general relativity in order to account for what I have, indeed, also in particular the early universe cosmology. So the action for a point particle is given here. Phi mu is a spin one vector particle. And Q is the test particle charge, is constant kappa times m, where the constant is square root alpha g, and alpha is the basic parameter of the theory. We'll end up with effectively only one free parameter. So when you work out the spherical symmetric static solution for this gravitational charge Q, Q is the gravitational charge. And by the way, this has dimensions of electric charge when you work it out. You use this equation of motion and this solution here with the Yukawa solution for the time component of phi mu. You get this result here. And this is the basic modified Mach acceleration law. G is equal to Gn 1 plus alpha. R0 is 1 over mu. Gn is the Newtonian gravitational constant. So the field equations are given here. They're more complicated than Einstein gravity, of course. But Einstein gravity was much more complicated than Newtonian gravity. By the way, Einstein gravity is the first modification, serious modification of gravity theory. Okay? Let's remember that. This is the angular momentum tensor, so on. And so for the potential for the weak, in the weak, this is for weak gravitational fields, not necessarily for strong gravitational fields. This is the potential, alpha is the parameter, And this is what you get for an extended distribution of matter. When R becomes small, this becomes one, alpha cancels, and you get Newtonian gravity. So already you've built in a screening that for small enough objects in the universe, you just get Newtonian gravity. So the photon follows an algeodesic, and we have to deal with the photon in a special way. And you can rewrite the big G variation, Brandsticky big G variation, in this way as a minimally coupled action. And you then do a conformal transformation. So the photon travels through a conformal metric, and that screens it. So you get agreement with Newtonian, with Einstein gravity in the solar system for Cassino probe and bending of light. So this is a picture taken by Sohrab Rava's son, Sepra. It's a photo action picture, and it's an apple falling. And this is the effect of Yukawa repulsive force and the enhanced Newtonian force. They cancel one another for small distances. Okay, but over the years I've tried different formulations of Mach. This one is based on a renormalization group flow. And it says that, as in the standard Marley-Yang-Mills theory, QCD, coupling constants are not varying as fields. They scale with momentum or inverse length. And so I put out a paper on this. This is more speculative, because it demands having a microscopic quantum gravity description of Mach, which I have not succeeded in solving yet. Anyway, it's an approach. There's a renormalization group equation for the parameter alpha, and so forth. This is inspired by the work of Martin Reuter, Mannheim, Germany, who has done a lot of work on GR for this kind of approach. And this is what you get from a renormalization group flow for the parameter alpha versus length or inverse wavelength k, momentum k. So let's get to Mach cosmology. Let's start in. The phi mu vector field is a neutral pressureless particle. They can form a cold Bose-Einstein condensate fluid before decoupling and recombination. This was put out already shortly after I published my paper on STVG. And this is the reference. And we have these parts for the energy density, matter plus radiation plus dark energy, baryon. The matter is baryon, phi particles, big G field contribution, and mu, the effective mass of the vector field contribution. Radiation is, as usual, photon plus neutrinos. So in the early universe, before decoupling, alpha is less than 1, and this is what you have for G. Alpha will be small, as we'll see. This is a picture of what happens in the universe. So for me, I have a radiation-dominated initial phase after the Big Bang. And I have the standard picture for what happens after the Big Bang is inflation. I also have an alternative for that, variable speed of light cosmology, published some years ago, lots of papers published on it. It's not terribly popular, but anyway, I consider that alternative explanation. So the problem here is that I have to get myself back to 10 to the minus 35 seconds after the Big Bang. And I look up and say, oh, the universe is expanding inflationary, exponentially. Or else I say, no, it's not. The speed of light is very large. Variable speed of light cosmology. Can we ever do this? No. So the rest depends on one's point of view, bias. You only infer from these models what's happening through what happens after the fluctuations cross the horizon, super horizon, and you get the little patches in the CMB football, as we'll see. So also before the formation of stars and galaxies, I have a dominant, my phi mu vector field density dominates the universe. And this is going to be a form of cold dark matter. I'll explain why this is necessary. When we get to the case where time where galaxies are evolved, clusters are evolved, then rho phi no longer dominates, the baryons dominate, and that's when Mach comes into play. This would explain why we don't detect dark matter particles. Okay, so this is what we have. We assume the horizon entry after decoupling, this is the case. And this is what you get for the first Friedmann equation. As for the cosmological constant, I use the standard model cosmological constant. Am I concerned about the cosmological constant problem? This hideously large fine-tuning, yes. Can it be solved? I think so, yes. Do I have a solution? I think so, yes. Subject of another talk. And this is what you have for the density perturbations. So in standard cosmology today, general relativity only comes in as a fixed background. And you do Newtonian fluctuations, Newtonian gravity fluctuations on top of that background. Okay. There are controversies about how important inhomogeneities are, and for and against. I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to take the standard picture that this works. Okay, so this is the Jeans equation for the fluctuations, density fluctuations. And the phi mu particles are pressureless and neutral. And I assume that they dominate before decoupling, before recombination. And this allows me to explain growth of structure, which is the most important evidence for some kind of dark matter. You can't make the structure growth work with baryons. I've tried. It's not possible, in my opinion. So this is what we have. And this is the picture showing what's happening. This is density perturbation versus this cosmic scale A. And this here is the growth structure according to my phi mu particle. And this is what the baryons are doing. They're hot. Baryons are hot. And they interact with the photons, and they produce these acoustic oscillations. These are potential experiments for detecting so-called dark matter. Photon. Spin one photon is like an axion. Spin one is non-thermally produced, as is my phi mu particle. However, as we'll see, you're not going to detect these particles in the present universe. So I claim. Okay, now, so as the universe expands and we get into post-recombination, we start evolving the galaxies and structure, and rho phi no longer dominates, the baryons dominate. And the mass of the vector particle decreases dynamically, either through a phase transition or according to this solution of the field equations for mu, which I showed earlier. And I fit galaxies, as we'll see. And this is the best fit from a paper by myself and Sohrab Rava, monthly note of the Royal Astronomical Society. And if you convert this value of mu into electron volts, you get 2.6 times 10 to the minus 28 electron volts. Negligible in the present universe.
So what could the mass be during the nuclear phase?
Well, in the early universe, according to the solutions, the mass could be around 10 to a millionth of an electron volt, typically. Okay, so We conclude that dark matter particles cannot be detected in the present universe, according to this scenario, either by laboratory experiments or in astrophysical observations. So this is supposedly why we don't see them. Okay? Now, you have to do some fitting of data. So now we use this cold dark matter before decoupling, and we start fitting standard model cosmology. And this is what we get here for the lambda CDM versus Mach for the density of rho phi. And if you put in these numbers, six basic parameters, you get this astonishing fit. Okay, this is a magic bullet from cosmology. With hundreds of data points with only six parameters, four of them are really basic, you get this remarkable fit to the data within 1%. Look at this, okay? It's really important. Now we turn to the matter power spectrum. So the matter power spectrum consists of doing correlation between pairs of galaxies and doing large surveys of this kind of data. And this is looking at galaxies in the present universe. So I don't have a dark matter halos for galaxies. So what I get when I do a calculation of the dark power spectrum, I get this, because the you have to calculate a transfer function which consists of contribution from baryons and from cold dark matter. There's no cold dark matter, so the transfer function for baryons has unit oscillations. It's a Bessel function. However, when you do my fitting, you get this result along here. This is the data. And in here, you have a fit to the data, which is very close to the lambda CM result, which is smooth. It's smoothed out because there's no oscillations. Well, there will be, but we'll see in a moment. It's smoothed out because of cold dark matter, which is dominating the galaxies in the present universe, the so-called galaxy dark matter halos. Okay, so now you put in a window function from MIT, and redo the calculation. And you have to do a window function because the data is not accurate enough. And this is the red picket fence result is MOG, and the blue curve is lambda CDM, and the chi-square for both is pretty good. They compete. And so if you see enough galaxies, you begin to see enough oscillations, maybe, due to the baryons. And this is the present data, recent data from 2013. And if you focus on it, you begin to see oscillations. But these oscillations are due to the baryons. They're not deep enough yet to distinguish dark matter from Mach. Eventually, hopefully, there will be. But when you work it out, you need millions of, many more millions of galaxy pairs to determine this. So there is some cosmological evidence for Mach. Paper came out by Valentino and Melchiori and Silk from Oxford. Recently, it's been published in Physical Review, D. And they claim that when you look at the polarization of light from the CMB, that you see a difference between lambda CDM and something, modified gravity, in fact. So I can explain this, and it's in a paper here, and I get that if alpha is between 0.2 and 0.35, then the lensing parameter A lens is given here, and A lens is equal to 1 in GR. So there's a 10-20% effect. GR was determined to change the way we do physics by 10% roughly, namely the accuracy of prediction of the perihelion advance of Mercury, 1915-16. 10%. If you remove the rotation perturbations due to the Earth, you get about 10% effect. So here we're looking at potential 10, 15% effect in cosmology.
So Don, you said earlier alpha can potentially run with scale.
Yeah, that's right.
So in this analysis, do you have any idea what scale would be dominant in determining this lensing parameter? Or is it going to be something that's a Black-D scale or much larger? So if you're alpha scale dependent, then this range of value would be determining the value of alpha or whatever that dominant scale is.
Yeah, so the experiment has to decide that at present. I've tried to find a theory for alpha. I'm still working at it, so I don't have any free parameters. Mu is fixed, you see, so I only have alpha to worry about. Rotation curves of galaxies. Here, paper. So we do a best fit. We fit from the Ting catalog of galaxies, Ting's catalog of galaxies, three or four galaxies, fixed alpha mu, best fit. And then we can fit 100 galaxies. So it's effectively a parameter-free calculations. And we fit dwarf galaxies, spiral galaxies, low-density galaxies, high-density galaxies, da-da-da-da-da. And these are some of the results. This is what we observe. This is the data, and this is what you see out there. You have to put in bulge and disk models, because the bulge and disk models in Cornu-Newtonian gravity already produce a flat rotation curve, but it doesn't produce the right magnitude. This is something that people often don't understand, astronomers don't understand, that the statement that rotation curves in galaxies are flat is sort of, it's not entirely, they're flat far out from the core of the galaxy, but in the core itself, you can, for small galaxies, you can get just Newtonian flatness coming out from a bulge and disk. Anyway, all of that's built into the paper, the calculations. This is more. As you can see, the fits are excellent. This is a paper in Physical Review with Victor Toth, collaborator. And we fit it out to 200 kiloparsecs, and using the same alpha and mu, and this red curve is the best fit right through the data. For the red dot, the red data is for zero isotropy, zero non-isotropy. Beta is equal to isotropy. Okay. So by the way, the dotted line here is Milgram's mond. It doesn't work. It's flat out to infinity, and I think it's wrong. Okay, so the statement that mond fits galaxies is in my opinion, probably not correct. Gear coming out. Gear is the new observations of the Milky Way. Will determine all of this data much more accurately. This is the Charlie-Fisher law. The rotation velocity goes like the fourth power goes like is m, not second, and we fit it. No problem. Now we get to clusters. This is another paper with Sora Brava, MNRES, 2014, and from here. You have to compare the dynamical mass in MOG versus baryonic mass for clusters. And we get a good fit to lots of clusters. Same parameters, alpha and mu, as fitted to galaxies. Okay? So it's a parameter-free fit, effectively. Bullet cluster. This has always been the poster boy of dark matter particles. Talks. Whenever you see a dark matter particle talk in conferences, they always show this and say, well, this proves that dark matter exists, okay? Wrong, maybe. Because we my former graduate student, Joel Brownstein, and I, MNRES 2007, showed that we can fit the Buller cluster without dark matter. And also I'm redoing this with a student in the States, Norman Israel. It's in preparation, and it's already at the stage where the paper's almost finished. And we fitted the Buller cluster again, got the same answers as before. And this is how you do it with convergence lensing maps and so forth. I don't have time to get into too much detail. This is the result of the Buller cluster. This is convergence Kappa map data for the Buller cluster, Cloadal 2006. This is what we get from MOG. Excellent fit. No dark matter in the present universe. Now we come to the train wreck cluster collision. And there's papers published on this now, particularly by Ji et al, 2012. And here it's quite complicated. It's more complicated than Buller cluster. And we fitted this without dark matter. Much more difficult job to do. It's effectively three pairs of Buller clusters in the lensing peaks. This makes it more, it's why it's called the train wreck cluster collision. And in here, in the plasma, the hot plasma, which is baryons and electrons, there's a dark matter peak. It's not supposed to be there, because the dark matters don't interact with anything, supposedly. And they just go right through in the collision. The galaxies go right through because they interact weakly with one another. So this is what the blue is here, galaxies and dark matter. This is the hot dark plasma, the Chandra X-ray plasma, which is kept together by what's called Ram pressure from baryons and electrons. And they have this dark matter peak. Bad. So how do you explain this in dark matter? Well, you have to say that the dark matter particles interact with one another so as to glue them together in the middle. Okay, and some of them go out to the sides, of course. However, if you fit the data, centimeters squared per gram cross-section, then you find that when you convert what the strength of the dark matter interacting, self-interacting dark matter, you need a force which is 20 to 100 times stronger than the nuclear force between two protons. This is a super strong force in the universe. However, the dark matter particles do not interact with anything else. Very weird, in my opinion. Okay. Sort of schizophrenic, anyway. But that's a matter of opinion. Okay, this is a picture of the lensing data for the train wreck cluster. Black holes. I'm running faster than I thought. Now, mark black holes, okay. So I decided to use my theory to say something about black holes. Two papers published recently. So now we get, these are the field equations for vacuum. And you don't get Arminiaga to zero because there's a non-zero contribution always on the right-hand side. Because the phi mu, b mu nu field strength is gravity. And Q is a gravitational source. The charge Q is a gravitational source, not electric. Black holes are electrically neutral. So are all astrophysical bodies. If they have any charges, you can show they have minimal effect on the space-time geometry. So phi, as m phi, as I say, is negligible in the present universe, so I ignore it. And these are the field equations. And this is the solution I get for Kerr, the Schwarzschild-Mogg, Kerr-Mogg black hole matrix are given here. When alpha is zero, you get back to ER. Here, the charge Q is square root of alpha G Newton times M. M is constant here. As in the Schwarzschild, it's the ADM mass observed in infinity. And these are the horizons for the Kerr-Mogg solution. When A is zero, A is the spin parameter, you get Schwarzschild. So this solution only depends on mass and spin, like the Kerr solution or Schwarzschild solution. Okay, so the black hole is, of course, one of the great mysteries of modern physics and cosmology. And it's black. That's why it's called a black hole, so we can't see it. But it has an accretion disk. And you can see accretion disks. And also true for, this is true for the binary black holes, around 10, 30 solar masses. And Sagittarius A star, which is the supermassive black hole at the center of the galaxy, our galaxy. And from astrometric observations, we know that the mass of this Sagittarius A star is about 4.3 something million solar masses, supermass. So, according to new progress, we now have the Event Horizon Telescope project. We have a group here, Prim Institute, with Avery Broderick, Tim Johansson, working on this exciting development. And the idea is the following, that the light from behind the black hole comes in from galaxies, quasars, whatever, in the distant universe. And it's captured, photons are captured in orbits around the black hole. This is the closest approach, etc. And some of the photons fall in through the event horizon, others come out and hit the telescope and observed. And the boundary between those two events is the shadow. So if you can determine the size of the shadow well enough, then you really have something important to say about black holes. The first real hardcore evidence for what black holes are really made of and look like potentially. What we have now is a Hawking radiation for a 30 solar mass object. The Hawking radiation is about 10 to the minus 9 Kelvin. And if you work out the evaporation of a black hole, it takes 10 to the 60 some gigayears, I think, to evaporate. It's not happening in my lifetime, that's for sure. So we can't observe Hawking radiation. However, we can observe this shadow. So this is the geometry of the Kerr solution, a Mach Kerr solution. It's axisymmetric because it has a spin. Whereas the Schwarzschild solution, of course, is rotationally symmetric. And this is what I get for the shadow radius for the Schwarzschild Mach black hole. It's given here. Just in terms of m and alpha. When alpha is zero, you get back the shadow of Schwarzschild for GR. And this is a simple approximation for the radius of the shadow. So the angular radius is given here. You divide by the distance to the Sagittarius A star, which you have to know fairly accurately. RG is the gravitational radius of Sagittarius A star. This is the mass. You plug in some numbers, and I find that for the Schwarzschild black hole, the radius, angular radius size is 26 microarcseconds, approximately. Whereas for alpha equal to 1, I get 46 microarcseconds. For alpha equal to 0.3, I get 36 microarcseconds. Now, according to the Event Horizon Telescope Group collaboration, they claim to be able to measure the size of the shadow to within 1.5 microarcseconds. That's amazing. 1.5 microarcseconds at that 88.3 kiloparsecs distance. Okay. Now, I was just told there's a physical roulette coming out on this. The abstract is out, but not the paper yet. So this is a nice picture generated by Avery Broderick, showing the ring, the photon, the accretion disk ring, and the actual size of the side. The shadow is darker on one side than the other due to the geometry of accretion disk physics, which I can't get into. Okay, so what do I get in the Mach? Well, for Schwarzschild, I wrote a code that determines the shadow size. And this is the Schwarzschild black hole, A for spin 0, spin 0.16, and spin of 0.95. So it's believed by simulations that the spin A is small for a Sagittarius A star, so it doesn't have much effect in changing the spherical shape due to what you get from Schwarzschild. Now, for Mach, these are different pictures. This is the Schwarzschild, and then ever-increasing alpha. I go alpha to 9 just to exaggerate situation. And you see that from this simple formula, how I calculate it, I do it more exactly, of course. I use this formula here. So this is just different values of A and alpha. Okay. So as mentioned, for alpha equal to 9, you get enormous difference, which is probably not going to show, but I just do it for the sake of illustration. the claim is that we can determine the shadow size to 5 to 10% accuracy, provided the effect of the accretion disk surrounding the black hole can be determined. Successful observations can distinguish between strong gravity Mach black holes and GR black holes. Now, there are many modified gravity theories models on the market. Okay. Besides mine, it's a highly competitive field. So, in the event that we get 36 microarcseconds instead of 26 microarcseconds, which distinguishes modified gravity from GR because of the 1.5 microarcsec accuracy of the measurement. What does that mean? Well, how much data can the modified gravity theory fit? I claim to eventually win, okay, by the amount of data that can be fitted. Compared to other modified gravity theories, which generally do not fit all of this data, or have yet attempted to fit the data. So this has to come into play. I don't like that. Physics is determined empirically. You need a prediction that distinguishes clearly between one theory and another. QED, anomalous magnetic moment electron renormalization theory, is known to many decimal places. Standard model of particle physics measurements that are clearly show that it's in the right direction. GR, bending of light, as I mentioned, 0.01% accuracy from radio wave VLBI measurements. So where's the magic bullet? Well, once you leave the solar system, you get into astrophysics and cosmology. And it's a somewhat dirty business all the time. It's hard to get a measurement like 0.01% accuracy. And different models fit different things and so on. It's getting very confusing. And there's an enormous amount of data that has to be fitted. There is hope that the cosmological evidence for modified gravity is there with the 10-20% effect I showed in lambda CDM for the polarization of light from CMB. But that's still some models, you know, come along and say, yeah, well, I can do that. So that's the story at present. I'm still searching for the magic bullet that distinguishes my theory from all the others. Now, I worked out did a quick calculation of the orbit of S. These are the S2, SO2 stars that highly elliptical orbits around Sagittarius A star, with highly eccentric orbits. And so I worked out the equivalent of the perihelion advance of Mercury, which is 43 arcseconds per century, as mentioned, 10% effect. And this is what I get. Delta phi is 0.18 degrees per 5 years. Quite startling. So they can measure this. They will start to, the Rosetta shaped periastron shift is occurring, so it starts moving out of its elliptical orbit. And I think eventually within the next 5 years we'll have enough data to determine this number. Unfortunately, the stars are far enough away from the black hole that according to Monk, I get the same answer. Tough, okay? So I can't use this as a way of distinguishing the theories. Okay, so this is the score sheet at the end. After some 10 years of work, I've fitted the cosmological data and showed there's potential evidence for Mach in the data already, in the polarization of light from the CMB. Rotation curves is done, bullet cluster and train wreck cluster is done. We've done some work on gravitational lensing, but we need more work to be done on this. Body and pulsar timing, Q, the gravitational source charge Q, root of alpha Gn, M or rho, the density, is positive because it's gravitational source. So there's no dipole radiation. So when you do the binary pulsar, there's no dipole radiation. And when you work out the gravitational emission, the power radiated by binary pulsar, which is 10 kilometers across maybe. The screening, these are two masses orbiting one another. The screening, as I mentioned earlier, just gives you the gravitational radiation formula for GR for weak gravitational fields. Now, we have an ongoing project here. Martin Green is the father of Stephen Green, and we're working on this at present. Hope to have some results using the Tolman-Oppenheimer-Volkoff equation for neutron stars and compact objects, which is generalized. And then we get strong gravity, the Event Horizon Telescope and black holes. And this is exciting. And we'll see what happens in the next year or two. This would be the first observation that distinguishes strong gravity GR from other gravity theories. Well, I guess you can say that gravity theories inside neutron stars are strong, but this is a particularly important experiment. Okay, so the idea behind MOG is that you have a theory. And if you have a theory in modern physics, you have an action principle. And you start with an action principle, and you just grind out the equations and so on, and grind out the predictions. That's a theory. A lot of dark matter modeling is not theory. It's phenomenological. The Navarro-Frank-White mass formula, mass profile for galaxy halos is a 2 or 3 parameter model for the density. By the way, face of Durham Cathedral, now, Carlos Frink is the director of the Institute for Computational Science in Durham. The face of the Durham Cathedral was lit up with the Navarro-Frank-White profile. Now that's fame, okay? So the LHC run 2 has not seen supersymmetric particles. Gluino mass is up to 1.82 TeV now. The stop, the supersymmetric top quark, I was told, is going to go up to 1.6 TeV and bound by April, May, June. Supersymmetric particles are not seen. The neutralino is gone as far as this is concerned. And so there are no candidates for dark matter yet seen at the LHC. This is important because you need an accelerator-type experiment to also cooperate with underground experiments and astrophysics experiments. By the way, the putative resonance of 750 GeV. It's diphoton excess seen by CMS and ATLAS collaborations. Over 160 papers have appeared on the archive.org since December 15th. It's not actually, the experimental result hasn't even been published yet. And it's approaching 200 papers within the next month. By the way, I've just written a paper with my model of the 750 GeV excess, diphoton excess, which will appear in the archive soon. It's fun doing this. It's probably a statistical fluctuation, but you know. The two other tsunamis in physics for archive.org were the OPERA experiment, the neutrinos go faster than light, and BICEP 2, that we had observed primordial gravitational waves. the last one bit the dust, so to speak. And they had tsunamis of papers. And this is good. I mean, these experiments go away, maybe false, but it's good fun for theorists. We learn a lot from doing this. I'm not sure the public appreciates it, because every time some startling new observation is declared by a press conference and it disappears, well, you know. Okay. I'm 3 minutes over the time. Thank you. Yes.
If there is only a self-interaction between the dark matters, what do we have to know about it? How can we kind of fit in the model?
How what?
How could we like change the result of the model?
Well, if you see dark matter particles underground astrophysics, LHC by next June, run two, and it has to be stable billions of years to form a dark matter halo in galaxies. So you not only have to detect a particle and claim it's dark, you have to make sure that it fits in with the astrophysics. This is not a trivial matter, sometimes overlooked. Then, if it all fits together, I quit. Okay? That's it. Because GR is a beautiful theory, it's simple. You don't want to mess with a simple, beautiful theory if something with something more complicated unless you empirically have to. Does that answer your question?
Other questions?
What about the CMB polarization? Because I guess you will have modified predictions since you have an extra vector component, I guess.
Yeah, so the only discrepancy is this due to the calculation of the, due to the experimental observation of the polarization of light from the CMB, as mentioned. And it's been published in Physical Review. There's been tension there for some time between lambda CDM. And so that's, otherwise, it's my phi mu is called dark matter in the early universe. You see, I distinguish between the early universe before decoupling, before recombination, and what's happening today. Okay. So this scenario says that you need the cold dark matter or some kind of dark matter to fit all that cosmology data, which is awesome, okay? But in present day, you don't. In fact, for galaxies, MARG works better at present than dark matter because there's been a lot of tension for dwarf galaxies. And when you determine lambda CDM rotational velocity curves in dwarf galaxies, which is supposed to be dense in dark matter, the rotation curve comes out much too big. The actual observed is quite flat. So of course, I fit that because I don't have any dark matter. It's not a problem. So all those tensions with low-scale lambda CDM, gone. Now, you can claim this is success. Okay, well, it is. I mean, but with the present sociological situation is not enough. My daughter, granddaughter, is in first year physics at University of Toronto. And she is taking an astronomy course. So she emails me saying that the two professors are saying that dark matter most definitely exists in the present universe. And of the six teaching assistants, five of them are working on PhDs for dark matter. Only one is working on extraterrestrial planet observations. They'll be teaching the dark matter in high school soon. They probably already are, as if it's an actual fact in the present universe. And this is not science, okay?
Well, if there's no other questions, thank you, John, again.